This is an ABC podcast.
Hello, welcome to PM. I'm Rachel Mealy. Tonight, Christmas is limited to just 10 visitors across Australia's most populous city. But larger Christmas gatherings are allowed in regional New South Wales, and some locals are looking forward to hosting their families from the Big Smoke.
I'm sure that there's people that would say, we don't want anybody to come here. But on the same hand, you know, we're a tourist destination and we need those people to be in the area.
And some Qantas workers stood down during the pandemic are still fighting to access their sick leave. Their union wants the High Court to set a new precedent, unlocking their entitlements. Well, in Sydney, 8 is the number of the day. It's a number deemed low enough to allow Christmas to go ahead across the city under slightly eased restrictions. The residents of Sydney's northern beaches have again been congratulated by health authorities for their resolute and unified response towards the COVID outbreak in their region. Even though they're unified, today they've been divided. The Northern Beaches Peninsula has been split across the middle, with two different lockdown zones created for Christmas. The divide leaves many families in the region unable to be together at Christmas, as Nick Grimm reports.
Sydney's Christmas restrictions mean Manly Vale resident Nicole Holmes can't visit her family outside the Northern Beaches region on Christmas Day. But under the new rules, they can visit her. So she's found herself suddenly hosting the celebration.
I'm actually literally at the mall right now. That's where it might sound a bit muffled. I'm wearing a mask. But yeah, I was just debating what we would do if we do have to host a Christmas.
So for a lot of people, it's sort of turned Christmas upside down. Everybody's going to have to reassess where they're hosting Christmas gatherings, if they're having them at all.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And like who's allowed to come and, you know, which locations we can have it in. Yeah, madly trying to work out what we're doing for all of our meals and stuff.
It's just a funny decision. And I don't think it's really clear in the southern part of the Northern Beaches exactly how many people we can have. Are we now included in part of the greater Sydney, or are we still a Northern Beaches bubble, but a southern part of a Northern Beaches bubble?
Marianne Curran is another Northern Beaches resident still trying to get her head around the new arrangements.
We're still isolated. We're not allowed to leave our homes, yet people are allowed to come in from outside the Northern Beaches.
Yes, people can come to you, but you can't necessarily go to them.
Yeah, yeah. So it's just all a little bit confusing.
Does it make any sense to you?
No, not at all.
These restrictions for the next 3 days will see Sydney households limited to just 10 visitors, plus any primary school-aged children and younger, in addition to that head count. For the Northern Beaches' worst-affected suburbs to the north, there will be a limit of 5 visitors, but only if they're already inside that zone. In the southern half of the peninsula, 10 visitors are allowed, and they can come from other parts of the city, though residents there are still ordered not to travel outside their zone. Premier Gladys Berejiklian.
So in some ways, some of the measures are actually stricter than what we have today, but what we've done is make sure that we're assessing the risk. So the risk to Greater Sydney is different to the risk in the northern part of the Northern Beaches, and also the risk in the southern part of the Northern Beaches is different as well. So please note that what we're putting forward is very modest. And it's based, and this risk is assessed against what the best data is telling us, what the best advice is telling us, and where we think things are at.
The changes to restrictions comes after a second day of just 8 new cases in New South Wales, all linked to the Avalon outbreak. One of those cases is a close contact of a health worker included among yesterday's numbers, who had been suspected of contracting the virus after helping transport COVID-positive travellers who had returned from overseas. But extraordinarily enough, genomic testing has revealed that wasn't the cause, because the nurse has somehow been infected by the Avalon strain of the disease. The state's chief health officer, Kerry Chant, says the exact method of transmission is still something of a mystery.
There is a missing link, and that missing link causes us concern when we don't know how that acquisition occurred.
The effort to trace the spread of the disease has been helped by a further 42,000 people who came forward for testing in the past day. But authorities have lost their patience, with businesses taking a half-hearted approach to gathering QR code data on their visitors, announcing that the state government's own Service New South Wales app will be made mandatory over the coming weeks. Health Minister Brad Hazzard.
There's a certain flippancy in the way some businesses deal with this. Putting a sticker on the table and expecting people to remember that is just not on in the middle of a pandemic.
Please think about if you are out and about attending a venue, please make sure if a venue you're attending doesn't have good systems in place, there isn't hand sanitizer, the QR code system isn't up to scratch, please go back home. We don't want anybody risking the spread of the disease and then us not even being able to contact people at a venue.
Good advice for those still able to get out and about. But for those planning on staying at home this Christmas, today's easing of restrictions by the Premier isn't being universally welcomed by Northern Beaches residents like Marianne Curran.
I think she would have been better just leaving the Northern Beaches in its own bubble. And then we could still travel within the Northern Beaches. Allow us to have the 10 people. Because I think the Northern Beaches has been fantastic with the way they've tested, the people that have been going to the testing stations. I think she's just made it a little bit more difficult. That's just personally, don't know.
That's Northern Beaches resident Marianne Curran. Nick Grimm was our reporter. Some Sydneysiders now facing those caps on their Christmas celebrations are heading into the regions to celebrate, where more people are allowed under one roof. Anyone outside the locked down Northern Beaches hotspots are allowed to travel to regional New South Wales, where gatherings of 50 are permitted. The failure to ban travel to the regions is worrying some regional mayors, who say while they need the tourism, they don't want the virus. Isabel Rowe reports.
Christmas preparation has been more of a rush than usual for New South Wales woman Tina Fay.
The push has been on because I haven't had a kitchen. 2 days ago, the last bit of the kitchen went in and it looks like it's on. We will be cooking on Christmas Day.
She's getting ready to welcome family from Sydney to her home in Mossvale in the New South Wales Southern Highlands.
A little bit from the Central Coast. I have two daughters from there and I've got my sisters in Pennant Hills.
And how many people do you think you'll have?
We'll probably have about 18.
That's a lot more than you'll be allowed around the table on Christmas Day in Greater Sydney, the Central Coast and Wollongong. Tina Fay is cautious about coronavirus, but not worried enough to call off Christmas.
And I've been watching it and I actually just contacted the council down here to make sure that we were on track and they said it's okay. I'm sure that there's people that would say we don't want anybody to come here. But on the same hand, you know, we're a tourist destination and we need those people to be in the area.
New South Wales Premier Gladys Berejiklian doesn't want to outlaw Christmas travel for those outside the Northern Beaches hotspots.
Whilst we're not restricting any mobility between Greater Sydney and the regions, we're just asking everybody to be extra cautious, extra careful. Please wear masks in indoor settings when you're going grocery shopping.
But that isn't sitting well with many regional mayors.
Look, we're really encouraging people to, from the Sydney area that, you know, along with the Premier's advice, if you don't need to travel, please reconsider.
Yorubadala Shire Mayor Liz Innes has had a year to forget, with deadly bushfires and a pandemic crushing the economy, a huge part of which relies on tourism. She's already heard from local businesses that people from the Northern Beaches hotspots have made it to her region and are bragging about it openly to locals.
There already have been reports from businesses of people that have openly stated that they're from the Northern Sydney area after the lockdown was introduced. And of course, the businesses down here are very aware of their responsibilities and are trying to do everything right. So what they're doing is they're asking for identification and turning those people away, which is, you know, understandable and exactly the right thing to do. But it is disappointing that we're hearing reports of people that have chosen to travel outside of the lockdown advice.
So those people should be in isolation. They shouldn't be out at all.
No, they should not be out at all. Even if they had left the Northern Sydney area, Before the lockdown, once they were in the areas and that came about, they were under instruction to isolate.
Liz Innes wouldn't be surprised if businesses were also hesitant to welcome people from Greater Sydney.
At this stage, the advice is that they don't have to turn people away from the Greater Sydney area, but I do know that most of them are looking at ID before they're allowing customers into their businesses, particularly food outlets.
In the neighbouring coastal shire, Mayor of the Shoalhaven City Council, Amanda Findlay, says most accommodation is booked out for Christmas.
Things will be slightly under capacity because camping will be slightly less, but definitely the people that will be coming here will be from, you know, southern Sydney, western Sydney and southwestern Sydney.
And how do you feel about that group of people coming in such large numbers to the region?
Look, there's not much a mere mayor from a regional town can do in this space. At the moment, it seems that it's okay, but I do know that our population, our permanent population, are quite concerned.
I mean, do you wish that New South Wales Health had said don't travel to the regions if you're in Greater Sydney?
Look, New South Wales Health feel that they've got a handle on their contact tracing. If they issue that order now, what it would have the effect of doing is collapsing our economy again.
She too has heard reports of Northern Beaches residents boasting about their escape to the region.
We don't need to have, you know, a bunch of people who are flaunting the rules, skiting about the fact that they're flaunting the rules and putting our people at risk. That those kind of people are not welcome in the Shoalhaven.
Back in Mossvale, resident Tina Fay sees it a bit differently.
We need to sort of look at it as other people aren't the enemy and we need to just look after each other, really.
That's Mossvale resident Tina Fay ending Isabel Rowe's report. Bill Botell is a public health advisor and adjunct professor at the University of New South Wales. He says today's numbers from the Northern Beaches cluster are encouraging, but he's urging health authorities to stay the course and keep a tighter lockdown in place. We spoke earlier.
New South Wales does have a very good public health system, so it seems that the numbers of tests have been very high and very well done to the people of Sydney who've taken this very seriously, reduced movement around the city and adhered to the lockdown arrangements in the Northern Beaches. So the daily new cases seem to be more than heading in the right direction.
So on that front, today the hotspot of the Northern Beaches has been divided into two. So from tomorrow, people in Greater Sydney and south of the Narrabeen Bridge can have 10 people in their homes with children under 12 not counted in that number. So that's 10 adults and teens for Christmas lunch across Sydney. Is that too many under one roof?
Well, the virus doesn't understand Christmas or Hanukkah or Ramadan or your birthday or anything else. It just gets on with transmitting. And the greater the confusion that is injected into the very serious moment when we have to bring the virus under control, the more likely it must be that there will be a slip-up and an increase of risk of transmission. The differences between postcodes and suburban boundaries are unknown to coronavirus. This approach did not work well in Victoria several months ago. There were postcode lockdowns and edicts were issued about this venue and that venue and these boundaries. It didn't work.
The New South Wales Health Minister, Brad Hazzard, has admitted that this system isn't perfect, but it would mitigate the risk of the cluster spreading outside the area and balance that against the desires of people to do something for Christmas. What's your view about that balance?
Well, there's no balancing at issue. It's just too bad, I'm afraid. The virus does not understand Christmas. So I can understand, of course, the desire of people to get together at Christmas. It's been a terribly tough year, but it will only be tougher if we have more coronavirus cases.
So your view is there's just too much movement under the new arrangement, that people just shouldn't be allowed to move into the hot zone and out of it again?
That's right. The virus doesn't move of its own accord, except in aerosol and close contact. The virus moves with people. That's the lesson we've learnt very hard in Australia in the last 9 months. So to stop the virus moving and to put it out of business, we have to stop people moving. Now, it seems in Sydney, I've got to say, that they've done a tremendous job. the people of metropolitan Sydney and reducing movement across the metropolitan area, I think the use of masks has increased, and that should be mandated, of course. And we have to ask the New South Wales government why it refuses to do that. But if we do those simple things, they're behavioural vaccines. We don't need the vaccines next year. We've got the behavioural vaccines right in our hands, in front of our faces with masks and stopping moving. And the best possible Christmas present you can give to your family and your kids this year is not to get coronavirus.
So after allowing a little bit of mixing to happen on Christmas Day, what's your view about New Year's Eve? From a virus control perspective, gathering 6 days after Christmas can't be a good idea either.
Well, I defer to the epidemiologists like Professor Brendan Crabb and Professor Raina McIntyre, and to the president of the AMA, who came out this afternoon and said that he thought, and I agree, that New Year's Eve should not go ahead in the way in which it's being planned. We don't seem to be out of the woods yet in Sydney because we're having these arrangements being put in place. So it's only a few days from Christmas to the New Year, and I think it'd be too great a risk to proceed with the celebrations as they're planned. We don't want New Year's Eve to become a super spreader event or for our control of the virus to be loosened in any way.
Public Health Advisor Bill Botell. You're listening to PM on radio, on the ABC Listen app and via podcast. I'm Rachel Mealy. Ahead, the dying days of the Trump presidency sees him sign off on a new round of pardons for friends and allies. Qantas workers stood down during the pandemic are still fighting to access their sick leave. Their union wants the High Court to set a new precedent unlocking their entitlements. In May, the federal court ruled that Qantas staff couldn't access paid, compassionate, personal or carer's leave because there was no work for them to be absent from. Industrial relations experts say the High Court could go either way, but whatever the outcome, it should provide much-needed clarity for an area of law that can lead to financial distress for employees and businesses. Here's business reporter David Taylor.
Michael Caine is the National Secretary of the Transport Workers Union. He fronted the media today to tell Qantas worker Peter Seymour's story.
Peter Seymour, a Qantas worker, suffering cancer, was having treatment for that cancer in the middle of this year, got an email from Qantas management telling him that he could no longer access his sick leave. He would be put on the job subsidy. And as a result of that, Peter had to take a redundancy from the company simply to have enough money to pay for his treatment.
The Transport Workers Union wants to help workers who have been stood down or on maternity leave, or like Peter Seymour, who have been forced to take a redundancy by taking Qantas to the High Court. In May, the federal court agreed Qantas staff could not access paid, compassionate, personal or carer's leave because there was no work for them to be absent from. The unions then appealed to the full federal court and again lost in November. The High Court appeal is backed by several unions and is being supported by the Australian Council of Trade Unions. ACTU Assistant Secretary Liam O'Brien says the unions are simply asking for existing leave benefits to be paid out.
And that's why unions are fighting to make sure that workers, in particular those Qantas workers who are sick, some with cancer, some with heart disease, who have accrued entitlements such as sick leave, should be allowed to access that through this period.
Qantas told PM it wasn't commenting on the union's decision to appeal. But in a statement, a spokesperson told us, "We understand that some employees will be disappointed today, but there's now been two courts who have confirmed that employees who were stood down are not eligible to receive paid sick leave because there is no work to be absent from. This is not just true of Qantas, but across the economy." And that's a point that industrial relations expert John Buchanan says is crucial. A High Court ruling could set a precedent, making it easier for all workers to access their leave entitlements if they're still in some way connected to their employer. Right now, he says, whether or not you receive anything depends on how a judge interprets existing workplace law.
Well, look, if the unions win this one, that would send a very clear signal that if there is disputed language, that will encourage unions in future to pursue the protection of people who are on sick leave and workers' comp and the like. If this is read more narrowly, then that will strongly discourage unions. I mean, you can only fight so many fights. And, you know, once the High Court's ruled as and shown its way of reading these things, and that will be an important indicator for all the parties.
Small business representatives are sweating on the decision. Small Business Council CEO Peter Strong says most businesses don't have enough cash flow to make good on all leave entitlements in one hit.
Nobody plans for that. If you've got 14 staff and you've got to pay out all the long service leave, and you might have 10 that have been there a long time because you're a good employer, and you've got to pay out their holiday pay as well, that's a lot of money, and we've had employers at the beginning of COVID doing this who had to go and get a loan from the bank to pay that money out. Now, thankfully, they could get the loan, but that's an awful lot of financial pressure put upon a business.
At the airline's annual general meeting in October, Chairman Richard Goyder attacked the unions for wasting their members and the airline's time and money on legal challenges. ACTU Assistant Secretary Liam O'Brien says Qantas should show some compassion.
Let's understand this. This is sick leave that has been earned by workers over many years. These workers themselves are facing significant economic crisis. Qantas should be making sure that they can provision for those entitlements that have been earned by these workers. It's important that sick workers are provided with the sick leave that they have earned through this period.
The unions will need to be granted special leave from the High Court in order to appeal.
David Taylor reporting. It's been a long wait for desperate Americans in need of financial aid to get through the pandemic. But now the President, Donald Trump, is indicating he may not approve the $900 billion COVID relief package. Republicans and Democrats have been at loggerheads over the bill for the last 3 months, but they'd finally agreed on its terms. The President has been putting pen to paper, though, issuing a flurry of pardons to friends and allies. Samantha Donovan reports.
Republicans and Democrats have been negotiating the relief package for months, but the president says the final product is a disgrace.
It's called the COVID relief bill, but it has almost nothing to do with COVID. This bill contains $85.5 million for assistance to Cambodia, $134 million to Burma.
The president is asking Congress to amend the bill to increase the payment to Americans in need from $600 to $2,000 and remove what he calls the wasteful expenditure on some items. And he's still clinging to the notion that he may remain in office.
Send me a suitable bill, or else the next administration will have to deliver a COVID relief package, and maybe that administration will be me.
Bruce Walpe is a senior fellow at the US Studies Centre in Sydney. He says the president's statement on the package is disturbing.
It's going to cause an awful lot of chaos and uncertainty at a time when Americans want economic relief and stimulus from the devastating effects of the pandemic. So this has thrown, at the last minute, a monkey wrench into something that is designed to keep the government funded and provide economic relief to the American people.
We're seeing lines of Americans waiting for food from charities just before Christmas. If the package doesn't get approved, how big a blow will it be to them?
People right now are wondering how they're going to make they're late on rent in December. How are they going to make January? They don't have jobs. They need unemployment assistance. That's not going to happen. It takes a catastrophe and turns it into a true calamity for millions of households across the country.
Are some of his concerns about the bill's provisions justified, though?
All the staff in the White House were giving signals to the members of Congress working on this legislation. It was okay. He was going to sign it. They are stunned at this turnaround. So he really has just kicked over the table in a fit as he is under immense pressure from losing the election.
While President Trump is refusing to sign off on the COVID relief package, he has been putting pen to paper, issuing a raft of pardons. Among those who've been cleared are four Blackwater guards who opened fire on unarmed Iraqis in Baghdad in 2007. 14 people were killed in the massacre. George Papadopoulos, the former Trump campaign aide who pleaded guilty to lying to the Mueller investigation, has also been given a pardon. His 2016 meeting in a London wine bar with Alexander Downer, then Australia's High Commissioner to the UK, played a role in sparking the probe. Bruce Wolpe says it's not unusual for presidents to issue pardons just before Christmas, but Donald Trump doesn't follow the usual processes.
They come from the White House. They're not vetted by the Justice Department. They deal with friends and associates and people who are making cases who are close to Trump, saying you gotta listen to this. So it really smacks of favoritism and indulging friends and associates rather than applying a rule of law or a sense of greater justice, larger justice, to people who may deserve consideration, pardon, commutation.
Bruce Wolpe is a senior fellow at the US Studies Centre, Samantha Donovan reporting. There are ongoing concerns in Australia about a memorandum of understanding signed between Papua New Guinea and China to build an industrial fishing facility. The issue for Australia is the proposed location on an island that sits on our border. Concerns about national security and the impact on fishing stocks have been raised. The project is yet to get final approval, and PNG has this week defended its consideration of it. But it speaks to a broader geopolitical issue in the Pacific. PNG correspondent Natalie Whiting reports.
Last month in Papua New Guinea, cameras flashed as a memorandum of understanding was signed for a Chinese company to build a fishing facility in the country. PNG Fisheries Minister Lino Tom told local media it was a big opportunity to access the Chinese market.
It will create more jobs for our people.
The Chinese ambassador to PNG, Xu Bing, said it was a win-win.
China has always support mutual beneficial cooperation with PNG.
But there's been a very different view in Australia. The $200 million industrial fishing facility is being proposed in Daru, a small island in the Torres Strait that sits on the border between the two countries. The Foreign Minister, Maurice Payne, was questioned about it in Parliament.
We are in contact with the Papua New Guinea government on the reported memorandum of understanding, in particular to ensure that the full range of Australian interests, including in fisheries protection, are fully safeguarded.
There are concerns about potential overfishing in the Torres Strait, but also about national security, given Daru's proximity to Australia. Former Australian High Commissioner to PNG and now University of Queensland researcher Ian Kemish says Australia does need to consider national security.
There's not much in the way of fishery stock in the Torres Strait anyway. So the suggestions that there are other reasons for this kind of involvement, the link between Chinese state-owned enterprises and the Chinese Communist Party is well known. So there are reasons to be cautious about these things, not overreact.
It's important to note that MOU signing ceremonies are incredibly common in PNG, and many projects don't progress beyond that.
I've seen so many examples of would-be projects, often Chinese projects in Papua New Guinea, that never amount to anything.
PNG's fisheries minister has released a statement in response to the fallout about the MOU. He acknowledged the growing interests and concerns, but says the project hasn't been given final approval and PNG is within its sovereign rights to be considering it. But it speaks to a bigger issue, the geopolitical power struggle at play in our region and the concern Pacific Island countries are being caught in the middle. Mr. Kemish believes there is potential for that to happen, but he thinks the issue is overstated at the moment.
I do not have the sense that China is yet taking a very deliberate, very aggressive strategic role in the region. It's sporadic, not very well coordinated, and often the announcements that China makes in the region just don't come off. It can sometimes even look a bit clumsy.
Australia remains by far the biggest aid donor to PNG, and this year has also doled out hundreds of millions of dollars in loans. But the Shadow Foreign Affairs Minister, Penny Wong, says the Australian government appears to have been caught unawares on the Daru issue.
We know fish numbers are depleted. The Foreign Minister has said the treaty in place will not allow for Chinese commercial fishing, and I think it is legitimate to ask, well, you know, what is it going to be used for?
The small island of Daru has always been close to Australia, but things may become closer in the months ahead. In his statement this week, the Fisheries Minister also offered his gratitude to Australia for its intention to further increase support to the province Daru is a part of. This is Natalie Whiting in Port Moresby for PM.
Thanks for joining me for PM this evening. I'm Rachel Mealy. Listen back with the ABC Listen app or search ABC PM for all our audio to share. Subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. We'll be back at the same time tomorrow. Good night.
You've been listening to an ABC podcast. Discover more great ABC podcasts, live radio and exclusives on the ABC Listen app.